We ain't seen each other in a long time. I got steaks. I got booze. I got beer. We are hanging out tonight.
I'm milling about with John Polano. He's the writer, director of Small Engine Repair. Hi, John. Welcome.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having me.
So if I move a little bit, there you are.
Oh, geez. Cover that up. That's so weird. You're hilarious.
Where was it? What was this location? Tell me about that.
Where we shot the film?
Where this backdrop is.
So that's a shop, a real working mechanic shop in Tappan, New York, which, you know, because we used a New York crew, we did that. I mean, we shot some on location in Manchester, New Hampshire, but most of it was Yonkers and Tappan. But that particular shop, I mean, look, dude, finding the shop was as hard as casting. You know, we looked at, I don't know, 50 places, you know, to find the right one. And there was no question that the location we chose was just perfect. It had so many different, you know, because so much of the movie takes place there. So we had to have all the different nooks and crannies and the different looks. You had a little stream with ducks. You had that outside area. You had the actual shop. You had an office. You had a bathroom and all that stuff. It was really, really lucked out with that.
So who's Frank? Obviously, you changed the name on the auto shop. So this belongs to someone else. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's not. It was actually an auto repair place, and they had a big lift which we had to remove. That was sort of the most technically difficult thing to do. But it doesn't. I forgot what it was called, to be honest. It wasn't quite as character-y is what we did.
Now, this was a play first, and I know how challenging it is, John, to go from a play to a film, and also it took you forever, I'm sure, to make all this happen. So sort of give me that backstory a little bit.
Sure. So, you know, in the adaptation of the at the point that I adapted the play, I had adapted quite a few things as a screenwriter, books mostly and things like that. So I tried to take the same approach, you know, which is let the movie find its own personality and mine what works. You know, when you do an independent film, one of the smartest things you can do is have a story that doesn't require a shitload of locations. It just makes it easier. And you can focus on things that are not, you know, there's no talking robots or aliens or things like that. You keep it, you know, contained. So that always seemed to suit itself. I was like, for the first thing I'm going to direct and make, and, you know, John Bernthal, who was in the first production of this, he and I from the very beginning, where I was like, oh my God, this would be a cool movie. And for those logistic reasons, also because the material was so battle tested and it was so provocative, yet at the same time, people got the intent. So you were both entertaining, and we had so many people who came to the play who had never seen a play before. And
really?
We were like, wow, this is what theater is, you know, because it was started out as late night. And, you know, with our circle of friends, especially John, you know, knows a lot of fighters, and because of his career and who he knows, and cops and firemen, along with this sort of really beautifully supportive theatrical community of LA. So everyone's sort of sitting in this 45 seat theater in the middle of night, watching this very provocative play and staying around and talking and being like, wow, we kind of have lightning in a bottle, and it's something dangerous. But the you know, a late night play, you put it out there and you never quite know sometimes. But the ingredients there were really connecting with people. And most important to me was, as unfiltered and vulgar as everything was, the theme beneath it and sort of the intent of the story was really resonating with people. So we kind of said, oh, this is really cool. This is this unique thing. And look, if you make a small movie, you got to come big or don't come at all. You know what I mean? So take a big swing, which we do. We didn't want to make sort of a, you know, your typical, I love Sundance movies, but a lot of times they're very feel good and they're very sort of, you know, at least the newer batch of stuff, you know what I mean? Whereas a lot more foreign films, they tend to move the needle and really provoke, and they challenge the culture and the audience. So that was something like kind of cool. And then, you know, as both our careers sort of took off, we kept coming back to it. And quite honestly, the theme, the technology in 2011 when the play was written was Foursquare. but the themes in the scenario just became more and more relevant, sadly, lately.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
And it was more like, how do you take what works in the play, make it a movie, but really harness this moment that we're having? And in particular, for me, it was the Me Too movement, which the play is, and the movie is about having a conversation about a lot of these gender dynamics and really doing so in a subversive way to shift the sort of victimology and shift all that and really spark a conversation, which the play always did. So when Me Too happened, and a lot of people were a lot more aware of it. I mean, those of us, look, I have a lot of sisters. I've always been sort of empathetic and talking. When Me Too happened, for me, it was never like a huge shock. Like, wait, what's happening? It was like, yeah, I've been hearing these stories my whole life.
Yeah.
And I tried to create something, a piece of art from a very masculine point of view that addressed these in a very unfiltered, different way. Like, you know, we're all pushing the boulder up the hill with this movement. I wanted to contribute to the dialogue in a different way, hit it in a different way.
Yeah, and it's so well done, John. And, you know, you mentioned John Bernthal, and of course now he's like mega famous because of The Walking Dead. But you guys were buddies. You were in a show, Mob City, together.
Yeah.
So, and I saw your little demo reel. I got a kick out of that.
Oh my God. I think I did that thing 10 years ago. Yeah. So, I mean, Mob City happened because, you know, as this play took off and started to move to bigger theaters, one night John invited Frank Darabont to see it, and he loved the play. And I kind of knew him a little bit before, but then when Mob City came out, he's like, hey, come on in and, you know, why don't you read for this? And then, you know, he just knew what I could do. I mean, the thing is like, I always use that analogy of when you work out, like when you go to the gym, and theater is a gym where you're like lifting 500 pounds. And then you get on a TV show or a guest star or whatever. Usually if you're like a weekly, you know, you're like, hey, can you go pick up that 50 pound weight? And you're like, yes, I can. So when you get the opportunity to have like Frank Darabont see, you know, a play where the actors are all doing very heavy lifting, it's easy for them to say, oh, then they could for sure do this, you know, and that was kind of cool. So I had that big advantage, and I had an amazing time on that TV show and learned, you know, and that was one of the, you know, handful of directors I got to work very intimately with who definitely, you know, when you direct, you're basically cherry picking things you thought were effective as an actor, especially you have that advantage to see how a director communicates with you and the way they make their films and their shows. So you try to sort of, yeah, cherry pick what works.
So I have to know, did you audition for The Walking Dead? Was that because
I never auditioned? I never auditioned for The Walking Dead. I didn't, you know, I met John after the first season, and yeah, I didn't like, I wasn't at that time as an actor. I was, believe it or not, I made most of my money doing commercials and little guest stars here and there, but I certainly wasn't really in the loop of the, I wasn't like the hot young actor. They're like, we got to see this guy for Walking Dead. So I really wasn't in that. I think I've auditioned for the show a few times over the years, but never anything substantial. Not like a zombie or anything, but always like a 2 or 3 guest star arc where you get eaten.
I love that. I'd love to be a zombie and get eaten.
I think, right?
So obviously you and John were buddies, and then you add in Shay Whigham to the mix. And did you know him before as well?
You know, I knew his work and I knew his reputation. And John, as we were casting for Packy, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize is when you make an independent movie, even when you make it for the budget we made it with, which by no means is like a threadbare budget, but we're not talking like, you know, Marvel money or, you know, it's not a huge budget. You make a movie like this for as little as you can to maintain as much creative control as you can. So, but nonetheless, there's a huge sort of pressure to cast recognizable people, because when you don't have millions and millions of dollars to market something, you have to hang it on. Like, people are like, oh my God, I love Shay Whigham. Let's see. You know what I'm saying? So you're already on second base with that.
Nobody knows him by his name. They know him by his face, which is very interesting.
But he always typically did sort of heavy characters and stuff. And I was a huge fan of him from Boardwalk Empire and, you know, King Kong and all this other shit. Loved him. And John, who knew him well, was like, this guy's the best. He's like one of us. He'll really come in sync. So we gave him the script. He really responded to it. I had a couple of calls with him, and then we're like, let's do it. And then we really rehearsed this movie like a play, which was like sitting at a table working at the script, and I had the advantage of having John and Shay there, and we just worked it, and I rewrote it for, I mean, all three of those characters have to be so organically linked that, you know, you can't just rewrite one character, then they all kind of shift. So we just spent months. The disadvantage of an indie movie, it's like you're waiting for the schedule to open up, you know. In particular, John was shooting this movie and this movie, and Shay had this. So you're like, when is the runway going to happen? One of John's movies fell through. So we're like, okay, here's when we're doing it. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, is like the material had to stay flexible. Like if we're shooting it in the summer, you have to incorporate that, you know? So we ended up shooting it in like the coldest month in New York. And it ended up being massively beneficial thematically and for the look of the film. It's cold, it's tough. You know, your breath, the snow, it really felt like it added a ton. So we were very fortunate in that. But like I said, if the window was August, well, shit, you're making it August. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I had to constantly be very agile with that and change it around that. But by the time we were shooting, you know, Shay and I had grown very, very close. And the three of us had this rapport that we just, you know, obviously John and I had a chemistry that Shay was like a little intimidated at first. He's like, I got to catch up, but he did it effortlessly. So, and especially Packy, and especially his version of Packy, is a little bit of a sort of outlier, which worked.
Yeah, it's obvious that you guys got along great. I don't want to give too much away because there are so many spoiler alerts in this.
Yeah,
but
sorry about that.
That's okay. Did you have that moment where you were like, we cannot go full Dexter here? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, look, I think, again, the advantage of doing the play and knowing sort of where you can go and where the material goes and where it ends, you know, you had that and you could kind of build it around that. So I always feel like I just knew thematically very strongly from the play and the film what I, as a filmmaker, wanted to say with it. So I, you know, we definitely, and look, when you make a movie, you shoot more than you're going to use, and it's about the edit and, you know, in certain things without giving any things away, sometimes it's three frames, but it's really, as opposed to a play where you're creating just a master scene and you have to, you know, stage it in a way, which has its advantages and disadvantages. But with the movie, it was just like, hey, you gotta, as one director said it to me, he's like, shooting is like catching butterflies. You catch as many these butterflies as you can, and then you're editing and you're like, all right, let's see what I got. So I definitely, you know, there were some cases where some of the more sort of, you know, extreme portions of the movie, you know, I had to cut. Obviously, I had a lot more to deal with. And I was like, we just have to discover it in the edit and really finesse it.
Did the actor have a safe word? You know,
a safe word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're at that point, you know, we had all been working together so closely. There's an immense amount of trust and you know, I mean, some of the stunt work in the fighting stuff was very real, you know. And I mean, there's a point where I get thrown against a wall by Bernthal's character, and we did it again and again. And he was like, look, he's like, the only way this is going to look good is if I really throw you against the wall.
If I kick your butt.
And he did. And I hit my head, and not to the point of unconsciousness and you're in doubt it, but like when I was like really seeing stars a little bit. So those were the moments, but you trust each other and you work. But look, there was never a second of, I mean, we've all of us, all of the performers and everyone and the fight choreographers were from, you know, they're Marvel guys who John knew from Punisher. Eric Linden was our head fight guy. And, you know, guy's done, you know, Captain America. So he was fine. So we were always in safe hands and all those moments, which is obviously super important, which is something you take from theater, is you do it night after night. So you have to make sure everything is safe and real. And, you know, it's like when you throw a punch, you're not hitting the person. The person who is selling it is the person who, you know, if I grab someone by the shirt, I just keep my arms, you know, relaxed, and they're the ones selling it. So it's just about knowing, you know, the safe, right way to do it, and then trusting that person. So I don't know if that's answering your question without really spoiling things, but no, there was never any, you know, real life danger in the stunts.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering if it wasn't like working class guys and you had wealthy guys, how much different would the approach have been?
I mean, I think massively different. I think one of the look, the film ultimately, the biggest sort of obstacles for the characters is the class and really laying bare that issue, which I feel like everything else we're talking about is super important, but we often don't really get the class issue. And what happens is, if you have enough money, you can get away with anything in our country. I mean, it's true.
Unfortunately, yeah.
It is. And we can say whatever we want to say, but if you have enough money, you can. And look, in my own life, I've been seeing it either happen to me, people I love, where you don't get the justice you really deserve because you don't have the money. And you're working paycheck to paycheck and you have all these other litany of stresses. So if these guys were wealthier and they had more, 100% it would be a different situation. But that wouldn't, I wouldn't write that, because the theme of this is these guys who are living in this cycle of violence in the way that they have, and this thing happens and they don't know how else to deal with it. And that's really the tragedy of it. And how you have these different men from different class systems who have their, the way that they can get away with things. And, you know, at the end of these days, these guys, they don't have that ability. And people from this neighborhood, by the way, I think they're reflective of most of the country. Most of us don't have those. And most of us, you know, I mean, you look at these really wealthy people, they're always like, I'm going to sue the shit out of you or do that. Like, do you have an attorney on, you know, on standby that you can call? I mean, like, I don't, you know? So it was sort of the frustration of that in creating that thing where, how do you get away with it? And look, we see it more and more, where these have these really high profile wealthy men, especially in politics, just doing whatever the hell they want and living these hypocritical lives and getting away with it. What's that?
The wealthy men in the Me Too movement.
Well, and to me, that is the, you know, it's easier to sort of sell like these guys would more typically, in sort of, I think, a lazier storytelling version, be more of the bad guys who do this. And, you know, but the reality being is like, is, it's not, again, they always try to position us as like the poor people doing the crime. And there is that, but the majority of the, I mean, the people getting away with literal murder in this country are people who have these means to do it. And that was sort of that rebellious fire is sort of underneath the whole thing. And hopefully you come away and you look at it and you're like, you know, the ideas of justice and what is earned and what isn't. But under all of that, to me, it was always about women are getting ground up either way. You know, and that was sort of the statement of it.
Wonderful. On that note, I need to let you go.
Oh,
this is a pleasure. Thank you pleasure. So much.
Thank you.
My father is gonna sue the shit out of you. How are we gonna get out of this? You didn't think about it. No.
I wanted tonight to be special.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always milling about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.
To you.